everything, a complete confession. Confessing to Wallace did little to ease William's mind. Pressed by demands for answers on all sides, he retreated into extravagant lies. He talked grandly of Mr. H.'s generosity, of how the manager of Covent Garden had seen the script of another new play called Henry II and had promised him a £700 advance. And William had become engaged to a wealthy young Miss Shaw of Harley Street. Samuel began to make preparations for the wedding. But when he visited Harley Street, there was no Shaw family, and the manager of Covent Garden had never heard of Henry II. Samuel wrote a wrenching letter to his son, but it was too late. The day before, William had quietly got married, not to Miss Shaw, but to an unknown girl about town named Alice Crudge. He never returned to his father's house again. Everyone seemed to forget something. William Ireland had written a great play. Not Vortigern. The dullard's achievement, it turned out, was his sequel, Henry II. But no stage was ever graced by its lines, not to this day. A week after leaving home, William confessed everything and beseeched his father. It was to no avail. Samuel steadfastly refused to believe William, refused to believe that the papers were forgeries at all. He died a few years later, insisting on the papers' authenticity. To his dying breath, he couldn't believe that his slow-witted boy had written them.
Andrew Sachs was reading The Clever Dullard from Banvard's Folly by Paul Collins, abridged by Richard Hamilton. Tomorrow's tale is of a revolutionary idea for travelling underground, which didn't quite take off. Meanwhile, today's 4 o'clock show also has a touch of Shakespeare about it. Join Mel in an hour from now.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, it's Steve Urquhart with you at 3 o'clock, and we're about to return to a novel that's been a great source of inspiration to Julian Fellowes. He said, "I felt this was my book. It spoke to me in a most extreme and immediate way. It's a remarkable piece of writing." The book he's referring to was published 100 years ago this year. It's by a Pulitzer Prize-winning American novelist, and it continues now. So let's get into the concluding part of this dramatisation by Jane Rogers, which stars Rebecca Knight. There's a recap at the beginning, so don't worry if you're just coming in on it. This is The Custom of the Country by Edith Wharton.
Undine needed to raise a deal of cash to annul her marriage to Ralph so she could marry the Marquis de Chelles. And she had hit on just the way to get it. Asking Ralph to pay for the privilege of keeping custody of their son, Paul. She figured he would go to any lengths to keep the boy, and she were right. Ralph borrowed $50,000 to invest, and Elma Moffat gave him to understand that he could double it. But when Ralph called on Elma, the news was bad. That investment weren't going to pay out the sum he needed. It weren't going to pay out anything at all for nigh on a year.
Next year? What earthly good will that do me?
I don't say it's as pleasant as driving your best girl home by moonlight, but that's how it is. And the stuff's safe enough anyway. I told you that right along.
But you've told me all along I could count on a rise before August. You knew I had to have the money now.
I knew you wanted to have the money now, and so did I. I put you onto it because it was the only thing in sight likely to give you the quick return you needed.
You ought at least to have warned me of the risk.
I don't call it much of a risk to lie back and wait another few months for $50,000 to drop into your lap. I tell you, the thing's as safe as a bank.
Well, how do I know that? You've misled me about it from the first.
I'm in it a good deal deeper than you. That's the best guarantee I can give, unless you won't take my word for that either.
Well, of course I'd take your word for it. But I can't. I simply can't afford to lose.
You ain't gonna lose.
Perhaps I'd better tell you.
Go ahead.
My boy. I'm awfully fond of him.
I should say you would be. He's as smart a little chap as I ever saw.
Well, you see, when my wife and I separated, I never dreamed she'd want the boy. She'd left him with me when she went away 2 years before, and at the time of the divorce, I was a fool.
You mean she's got sole custody?
Yes.
Oh, that's bad, bad.
And now, I understand she's going to marry again, and of course I can't give up my son.
She wants you to, eh?
Yes.
It's a lot of money.
That's the difficulty. And I'm afraid she won't wait or take less.
No. I don't believe Undine Spragg will take a single cent less.
Now, look here, Moffat. The fact that I've been divorced from Mrs. Marvell doesn't authorize anyone to take that tone to me in speaking of her.
Is that so? Well, if that's the case, I presume I ought to feel the same way. I've been divorced from her myself.
What on earth are you talking about?
Why, facts. You didn't know. I understood from Mrs. Marvell your folks had a prejudice against divorce, so I suppose she kept quiet about that early episode. The truth is, I wouldn't have alluded to it now if you hadn't taken a rather high tone with me about our little venture. But now it's out, I guess you may as well hear the full story. It's mighty wholesome for a man to have a round now and then with a few facts. Shall I go on? Well, it was this way. Undine Spragg and I were made one at Opaque, Nebraska, just 9 years ago last month. My, she was a beauty then. Nothing much had happened to her before but being engaged for a year or two to a soft called Millard Binch. And, well, I guess she liked the change. We didn't have what you'd call a society wedding. No best man, no bridesmaids, no fancy choirs. Fact is, Pa and Ma Spragg didn't know about it till it was over. But it was a marriage fast enough, as they soon found out when they tried to undo it. Trouble was, they caught on too soon. We only had a fortnight. And then they hauled Undine back to Apex. And, well, I hadn't the cash or the pull to fight him. I always know when I'm licked. And I was licked that time. So we unlooped the loop and they fixed it up for me to make a trip to Alaska. Let me see, that was a year before they moved over to New York.
You. You and Undine.
Next time I saw Undine, I sat alongside of her at the theater the day your engagement was announced.
Before my marriage. Did you know they hadn't told me?
I understood as much.
You knew it the day I met you in Mr. Spragg's office.
Did we meet there?
She... Oh, no.
Stop your investment. You can't feel any meaner about it than I do when you see it out. All we gotta do is sit tight.
Mr. Ralph, sir?
Yes, I am. My key doesn't seem to...
You're not well, sir?
I just want to sit in my room for a moment. In the cool.
Shall I bring a drink, sir?
It's so hot.
Undine Spragg and I were made one at Opaque, Nebraska, just 9 years ago last month.
Did she think of that on her honeymoon in Siena?
Years ago. Father had some business with him and brought him home to dinner one day.
You've never seen him since?
I suppose I must have, but that all seems so long ago.
Mr. Rouse, sir, can I bring you a cold drink?
No. No, thank you.
Or a sandwich, sir?
No. The heat in here is terrible. Why weren't the shutters closed?
Is that Eliza, sir? If I don't stand behind her, she... But won't you come down to the cool dining room and let me make an iced drink?
No. No.
It's not only the things Eliza forgets to do.
Yes, yes, I see.
Then you'll come down, sir?
But the money... Where's the money to come from?
I I'd say he was running a fever, sir. Shall I telephone Miss Laura?
What?
Out in Apex, if a girl marries a man who don't come up to what she expected, people consider it's to her credit to want to change.
I'll put a clean, fresh sheet on the settle downstairs.
It's all right. Please, just leave me alone.
Oh, and congratulations, Mr. Marvell, for your wedding. On Monday.
First thing you need to drink.
You'll only leave me alone.
Mr. Ralph!
Yes. This will make everything all right for my wife.
Beg pardon, sir? Mr. Ralph, sir!
Undine let Paul stay on with Ralph's family for 3 months out of consideration for their feelings. Becoming a widow like that was a stroke of fortune, because now there wasn't any need to ask that old pope to annul her marriage. She and the Marquis de Chelles tied the knot pretty soon, and after their honeymoon they moved in with his folks in Paris. And when we landed off the steamer, that's where I took little Paul to meet his new family. They were sitting in a big dark drawing room hung with portraits of dukes and persons in wigs who all had the high-nosed look of the aunts and cousins and so forth waiting beneath them. And Paulie stood in the doorway, all dressed in black, staring at the lot of them with his big blue eyes, till his mama comes and gives him a little push.
Paul, why don't you go and kiss your new granny?
Does she want me to?
Of course, you silly.
How many more do you think there'll be?
I never knew such a child. They've turned him into a perfect little savage.
Yeah, he won't be a savage long with me.
Shake hands with your new papa, Paul.
Come along, old chap. Say hello to my mother.
Il est bien beau.
She thinks you're very handsome.
Do be nice, darling. Say bonjour, madame.
Bonjour.
I tell you what, Paul. Should you like to see the courtyard? There's a pretty fountain and a place where I used to play ball when I was a boy.
Yes, s'il vous plaît.
Raymond, he hasn't even greeted everyone properly
yet. Let him be. He's shy. He'll come round. Mama, where might I find some of the old jouets?
I don't know what your ma would say if she knew you were going to live on with his folks now you're married.
That's what they do here.
We read in the papers you were going to live in some grand hotel or other. Give me the other hand, dearie. Now, don't them nails look like pearls?
Thank you. The Hotel de Chelles, it's their Paris residence. But they let out all the best rooms and just keep the pokey ground floor for themselves. So Raymond and I have to squash ourselves into his old bachelor rooms. I never thought they would put you and Paul in my dressing room, though.
There ain't a lot of space for entertaining here. But I guess you'll begin to give parties as soon as ever you get into a house of your own.
The other family house is the chateau. That's where we'll go in the summer.
Oh, you'll give a lot of big weekends down there, then. Well, you look handsomer than ever, Undine de Chelles. I'll take that back to your mother anyhow. And he's dead in love, I can see that. Reminds me of the way Ralph...
I wish he hadn't died like that.
Folks said it was the hot weather. First he had that pneumonia, and he never got his strength fully back. Then that fierce heat wave, it could have affected his brain. That ain't uncommon. That's what the doctors told the Marvells.
Yes, the hot weather.
At least he left his boy well off.
You can't imagine I would have let Paul want for anything, no matter what his circumstances.
She didn't like to refer to anything so vulgar as Paul's inheritance, but the fact is, Ralph left everything to the boy. And soon after he died, there was $100,000 paid into his estate by the Apex Consolidation Company. Of course, as Paul's mother and his guardian, the income went to Undine. And then she secured an allowance of $5,000 from Ralph's people for the boy's bringing up and education. So her income was pretty appreciably improved. Not but that she wasn't sorry about Ralph's death. She would have much preferred to have gotten her wealth some other way, but she was fully entitled. It did rankle with her, the perverse way things had of coming to her as if they'd been stolen, when all along they were hers by rights. A girl like Undy needs to be adored, and Raymond de Chelles surely adored her. So she managed to put her morbid fancies aside, along with the inconvenience of her cramped living quarters, while she was in Paris. And whenever she went out, he came in his father's carriage to fetch her home again.
I congratulate you, my dearest. Your boy is delightful. He has won mother's heart entirely.
I'm so glad.
Allez, va! Where have you been all morning?
Oh, I'm here at the dressmaker's.
All morning?
Merci, yes. Where else would I be?
I want you to tell me if you plan to visit anyone. Now you are my wife, there are certain types of people it is not suitable for you to know.
What, among my friends?
Some of the people Lily Estradina mixes with are entirely unsuitable. My aunt's an angel, but she's been weak enough to let Lily turn the Hotel de Dordogne into an annex of Montmartre.
But it was through Princess Estradina that I met
you. Of course, you'll have to show yourself there now and then. In these days, families like ours must hold together. But go to the Réunion de Famille rather than Lily's intimate parties. Go with me or with my mother. You're too young and good-looking to be mixed up with that crew.
Well, my love, if I am to spend more time here with you and your mother, might we consider getting rid of the tenants on the premier and moving up into those rooms with the lovely tall windows?
My darling, but there can be no question of it. The tenants have lived there since I was a child. My father depends on that income. We have always lived on the entresol. My dear Undine, soon you will have all the space your heart desires. What do you say to going down to Saint-Désert, to the chateau?
But is the season here over so early? Oh,
who gives a hang for this season when he can be in the company of beauty like yours?
In the 18 months that followed, Undie got to know Saint-Désert pretty well. That poor girl knew the rain there, and the chill damp smell of the great empty house, the stuffing poking out of the chairs, the threadbare curtains, along with the wide bands of crepe her husband made her wear for the death of his father. And she knew Raymond didn't have 2 cents to rub together. It all went on bailing out his younger brother, who was running with a pretty wild set. When Raymond had been to Paris in November on just such an errand, he come home to find Undine staring blankly at the tapestries in the great hall.
Well, everything's settled.
Settled, Raymond? Without your having to pay?
Of course I've had to pay. Did you suppose Hubert's creditors would be put off with vanilla eclairs?
Oh, if that's what you mean. If Hubert only has to wire you at any time to be sure of his affairs being settled...
Wouldn't it be a happy thought to tell them to bring tea?
In the library, then. It's so cold here and the tapestries smell so of rain.
I suppose they ought to be taken out and aired.
Much good it would do them. It's just as damp outside.
I know it's been a trial to you, Undine, but this is the last time I shall have to pull the poor boy out. No, it's true. He has found himself an heiress. He is to be married, and whatever debts he runs up after this will be met by his bride, a delightful young lady named Miss Luty Arlington.
An American? He's marrying an American?
Indeed. I only stayed over in Paris in order to meet her.
Who is she? What a name.
Her father's a general. A general manager, whatever that may be.
But if Hubert's engaged to a rich girl, why on earth do we have to pull him out?
General Arlington is immensely wealthy, but he requested what he called a clean slate from Hubert.
You paid everything off. Where on earth did your brother pick up anyone respectable? Do you know where her people come from? I suppose she's perfectly awful.
I believe Hubert made her acquaintance at a skating rink. They come from some new state. The general seemed surprised I hadn't heard of it. He said it was already known as one of the divorce states, and the principal city had, in consequence, a very agreeable society. Vraiment, la petite n'est pas trop mal.
I dare say not. We're all good-looking. But she must be horribly common.
My dear, you have your own customs.
Oh, I know we're all alike to you. You see no difference between me and a girl one gets engaged to at a skating rink.
Miss Arlington's burning to meet you. She says she's heard a great deal about you, and Hubert wants to bring her down next week. I think we'd better do what we can.
Of course. If they're as rich as you say, I suppose Hubert means to pay you back by and by.
Naturally, it's all arranged. You see, we've every reason to be kind to Miss Arlington.
Oh, I'll be as kind as you like. And after a while, we shall be a good deal better off, especially, as you say, with no more of Hubert's debts to worry us. And then, perhaps you will consider my plea to move up to the premier in Paris. Because really, you know, as the head of the house, you ought to be...
My dear, as head of the house, I've so many obligations. And one of them is not to miss a good stroke of business when it comes my way.
What good stroke of business,
Why,
Raymond?
An incredible piece of luck. Miss Arlington's father was looking for an apartment for the young couple, and I've let him the premier for 12 years, on the understanding that he puts electric light and heating into the whole hotel. It's a wonderful chance. For, of course, we all benefit by it as much as Hubert.
A wonderful chance? It's extraordinary of you to do such a thing without consulting me.
But, my dear child, you've always professed the most complete indifference to business matters. You may be sure I've acted on the best advice. And my mother thinks I've made a remarkably good arrangement.
I dare say, but I'm not always thinking about money as you are.
There are many reasons why I have to think about money. One is that you don't, and another is that I must look out for the future of our son.
Oh, my dear, you'd better leave it to your brother to perpetuate the race. There'll be more room for nurseries in their apartment on the premiere.
This is not...
Well, of course you can do what you like with your own house and make arrangements that suit your family without consulting me. But you needn't think I'm ever going back to live in that stuffy little hole with Hubert and his wife splurging round on top of our heads.
Anno.
Well, Undie forgot her threat, though there's no telling that her husband did. The following May, she and the Marquis were back in Paris, and Undie met her old friend, the Princess Estradina.
I was beginning to think I should never see you in Paris again, chérie.
Thank goodness, Raymond is much less fussy than he was last time of me going about Paris on my own.
Less fussy? You think that's a good sign?
Well, I suppose he's less jealous, if that's what you mean.
It's a thousand pities you haven't got a child.
Yes, I wish we had.
Especially as Hubert's wife.
Oh, if that's all they want. It's a pity Raymond didn't marry Hubert's wife.
Have you seen what they've done to le premier, chérie? The electric illuminations, the American bathtubs, the murals in the dining room. Ils sont extraordinaires.
I've seen it.
The Arlingtons must have an incalculable amount of money. But tell me, why you come so little to town? Is it domestic bliss with your son in the chateau?
We can't afford... Oh, Raymond likes me to stay at home.
Raymond? He keeps you shut up there? What about his trips to Dijon? What do you suppose he does with himself when he runs up to Paris? Politics? Politics don't occupy a man after midnight.
What do you...
My dear, it's what I always say when people talk to me about fast Americans. You're the only innocent women left in the world.
It was a rare thing now for Raymond to enter Undie's room, but he came in there one evening when they was back at Saint-Désert.
Oh, goodness, Undine, has all this come from Paris?
Yes, I ordered it.
But what's here? Powders? Scents? Facial bandages? An electric massager?
I'm losing my looks hidden away in all this damp. I need something to improve my complexion.
A run out in the fresh air with Paul would do you more good and cost a great deal less.
I've paid for it all myself. Look at me, Raymond. Am I losing my beauty?
Not for a moment. You look very lovely indeed. I don't know the woman who could hold a candle to you.
Raymond!
What is it, my dear?
Your mother blames me for our not having a child. Everybody thinks it's my fault.
My mother's ideas are old-fashioned, and I don't know that it's anybody's business but yours and mine.
Yes, but if...
But nothing. I must have an early night. I am for Dijon in the morning.
Raymond.
You've never looked better. Your dress is extremely becoming. Good night, Undine.
time fairly crawled at Saint-Désert, and Undine's pleasures shrank to waiting on the delivery of a new box of gowns from Paris and finding new ways of annoying her mother-in-law. She began to order afternoon tea in the Great Hall. That called for the lighting of 2 extra fires and fresh cakes every day, and were enough to scandalize the Marquise. The chateau firewood bills were doubled.
It's ridiculous that your mother should sit in her bedroom all day. If we have a fire downstairs, why can't she let hers go out and come down? I don't see why I should spend my life in your mother's bedroom.
My mother tells me she can manage without a fire in her room.
But she doesn't come down.
No, she likes to sit in her room. I've been over to the other side of the estate. The February rains have weakened the dam of the Alette, and the vineyards will be in danger if we don't rebuild at once.
Your mother
is... I'm sorry it should happen just now. I'm afraid I shall have to ask you to give up your spring in Paris.
Oh, no, no!
I know it's a disappointment, but our expenses have been unusually heavy this year.
I don't see why we should give up Paris because you've got to make repairs to a dam. Isn't Hubert ever going to pay back that money?
Surely you understood at the time that it won't be possible until his wife inherits.
Till General Arlington dies, you mean? He doesn't look much older than you.
Hubert has paid the interest quite regularly.
That's kind of him. You can do as you please, but I mean to go to Paris.
My mother is not going. I don't intend to open the apartment.
I understand, but I shall open it, that's all.
I prefer that you shouldn't go without me.
Then I shall go and stay at the Nouveau Luxe with my American friends.
That never.
Why not?
I consider it unsuitable.
You considering it so doesn't prove it.
You never seem to see that there are necessities.
Oh, neither do you. That's the trouble. You can't keep me shut up here all my life and interfere with everything I want to do just by saying it's unsuitable.
I've never interfered with your spending your money as you please.
Mercy, I should hope not when you've always grudged me every penny of yours.
You know it's not because I grudge it. I would gladly take you to Paris if I had the money.
You can always find the money to spend on this place. Why don't you sell it if it's so fearfully expensive?
Sell it? Sell Saint-Désert?
Well, why not? You might sell some of the things in it anyhow. In America, we're not ashamed to sell what we can't afford to keep. There's a fortune in this room alone. You could get anything you chose for these tapestries.
Oh, you don't understand.
I understand that you care for all this old stuff more than you do for me, and that you'd rather see me unhappy than touch one of your great-grandfather's old chairs.
You don't understand.
If you grudge me everything I care about, we'd better separate.
That's one of the things we don't do here. Will the Marquis be joining us to discuss these tapestries?
No. He's away on business. He has authorized me to act on his behalf. That's why it was me who wrote to you, Mr. Fleischhauer.
Very good, madam.
They were given by Louis XV to the Marquis de Chelles, who...
Their history has been published. Magnificent.
I do...
Very well. I have brought down a gentleman.
A gentleman?
The greatest American collector. He buys the best.
I don't understand. I never said the tapestries were for sale.
Precisely. But this gentleman buys only things that are not for sale.
I didn't say... I just wanted you to put a price on them.
Let me see him look at them first. Then I'll put a price on them. Mr. Moffat!
Why, Undine. Well, if this ain't the darndest... What on earth are you doing down here?
I live here. Didn't you know?
Not a word. Never thought of asking the party's name. Say, Fleischhauer, I told you those tapestries would have to be out and outers to make up for the trip, but now I see I was mistaken.
I didn't know you'd become a great collector, Elmer.
The greatest? Didn't he tell you so? I thought that was why I was allowed to come.
Of course, you know the tapestries are not for sale.
That's so. I thought it was only his dodge to get me down. Well, I'm glad they ain't. If it'll give us more time to talk.
If, nevertheless, you would first take a glance, our train is...
It ain't mine. At least not if there's a later one.
Of course there is. But here are the tapestries.
By George.
They're historical, you know. The king gave them to Raymond's great-great-grandfather. The other day when I was in Paris, I asked Mr. Fleischhauer to come down sometime and tell us what they're worth. And he seems to have misunderstood to have thought we meant to sell them. I'm sorry you've had the trip for nothing.
It is not nothing to have seen such beauty.
I'd hate to see Mr. Fleischhauer miss his train.
I shall not miss it. I miss nothing.
See here, you let the motor take you to the station and charge up this trip to me.
Well, this beats the band. I thought you were living up in Paris.
Oh, French people. I mean, my husband's kind always spend a part of the year on their estates.
But not this part, do they? Everything's humming up there right now. I was dining at the Nouveau Luxe last night with the Driscolls and Shallums and Mrs. Rolliver.
Ah, the old crowd.
But I suppose you've got your own crowd now. You always were a lap ahead of me. It's sort of funny to see you in this kind of place. But you look it. You always do look it.
So do you. I was just thinking it. I suppose you must be awfully rich.
Oh, out of sight. The consolidation set me on my feet. I own pretty near the whole of Apex. I came down to buy these tapestries for my private car.
I don't suppose I could stop you if you really wanted them.
Nobody now can stop me if I want anything.
I didn't know you and Rolliver were friends.
Oh, Jim? Oh, Jim's all right. He's in Congress now. I've got to have somebody up in Washington.
You're a millionaire.
And this is what I helped you to get. What is it they call you, a marquise?
What made you do it? I've often wondered.
What, lend you a hand? I saw you were in a tight place that time I ran across you in Paris, and I hadn't any grudge against you. Fact is, I've never had time to nurse old scores, and if you neglect them, they die off like goldfish. This is a great place you live in.
Yes, but I see a little too much of it. We live here most of the year.
That's so? Why on earth don't you cut it and come up to Paris?
Oh, Raymond's absorbed in the estates, and we haven't got the money. This place eats it all up.
Well, that sounds aristocratic. But ain't it rather out of date? When the swells are hard up nowadays, they generally chip off an heirloom. There are a good many Paris seasons hanging right here on this wall.
Yes, I know. To be honest with you, Elmer, it's frightfully lonely down here. Raymond and I can't agree. He's obsessed with preserving all these old things and handing them to the next generation. He's not interested in going to Paris.
Not interested in Paris?
Well, not interested in the season. He goes there on business, but he likes me to stay here and keep his mother company.
You two great friends?
No. She spies on me, you know. I was in mortal terror she might accost the Valuer.
Well, it's a downright shame you don't go around more.
I hope I will someday. But what about you? Do you have time for anything besides business?
Oh, yes, I have plenty of time now. For this. For hunting down treasures.
You're forming a collection?
Yes, of pictures and furniture. A great representative assemblage of unmatched specimens. I mean to have the best, you know.
But how can you tell?
Oh, I know it when I see it. I guess that's the only good reason. It was what you were always after, wasn't it?
So, chérie, is your engagement diary filling up?
Raymond's only agreed to us coming to Paris on condition that we don't entertain. That's his great new economy drive. No hospitality.
I understand from Maman that he would have preferred not to come at all this season. Undine.
But Lily, am I to moulder away in the country for the rest of my life? And now we're here, it's impossible to have a good time. We're only invited to the big dinners, that type of impersonal crush made up from visiting lists. We've been away so long, our friends have forgotten us.
Mon cousin is not a man his friends forget. Chérie, forgive me for saying it, but it's more the fact of your being in the wrong set.
But I'm in his set. The one that thinks itself too good for all the others. That's what you told me when I said it bored me.
Exactement, Undine. Mais ce n'est pas une question of you being bored.
You mean that I'm the bore?
Chérie, you don't work hard enough. You don't keep up. Everyone finds you très belle, but in society a woman has to be more than belle. She has to converse. She has to be au courant. She has to have an opinion on things.
What sort of things?
Oh, you know, art, philosophy, literature.
Oh, that.
Undine tried to make light of Lily's hard words. But the fact of the matter was, she had took note that Raymond was never interested in conversing with her. In company, her entrances were always triumphs, but when folks began to talk, they ignored her. So she decided to cultivate herself, and she spent a whole morning in the Louvre and attended 2 philosophy lectures. But when she gave out her opinions, people acted bewildered. She decided not to waste any more time on that and got back to her beauty remedies and restoratives. A tradesman's reminder fell into Raymond's hands, and he made it clear again that he expected her to pay all her personal debts without any help from him. The very next day, he came into her room with a letter in his hand.
Is this your doing?
What is it?
An offer for the Boucher tapestries. Transmitted via one Monsieur Fleischauer. Look. What does it mean?
How should I know? It's a lot of money.
It was Fleischauer who brought a man down to see the tapestries one day when I was away at Bonn.
Yes. It was Fleischauer and I sent for him.
You sent for him?
Why shouldn't I? Something had to be done. We can't go on as we are. I've tried my best to economize. I've scraped and scrimped and gone without heaps of things I've always had. I've given up sending Paul to school because it's too expensive and asking my friends to dine because we couldn't afford it. And you expect me to go on living like a hermit for the rest of my life when all you've got to do is hold out your hand and have 2 million francs drop into it.
That's your answer. That's all you feel when you lay hands on things that are sacred to us. And you're all alike. You come among us from a country you care for so little that before you've been a day and hours, you've forgotten the very house you were born in. You come among us wanting the things we want and not knowing why we want them. Aping our weaknesses, exaggerating our follies, ignoring or ridiculing all we care about. You come from hotels as big as towns and from towns as flimsy as paper, where the streets haven't had time to be named and the buildings are demolished before they're dry, and the people are as proud of changing as we are of holding to what we have, and we are fools enough to imagine that because you copy our ways and pick up our slang, you understand anything about the things that make life decent and honourable for us.
Do you mean to say you're going to refuse such an offer?
That's how I refuse it!
How dare you speak to me like that? Is talking to a woman in that way one of the things you call decent and honorable? Now I know what you feel about me. I don't want to stay another day in your house. And I won't either.
If you're capable of this, you're capable of anything.
Poor Undie sat in her room staring at the portraits on the walls as though they had joined hands to imprison her. If she could have sold just one of them, or any of the trifles of antique junk the place was full of, she could have paid for her most pressing wants. And Elma Moffat could have bought the lot. Her mind flew back to her early days with Elma, when he come into Apex like a whirlwind and awarded her first prize at a beauty show he organized, and led dances, and gave speeches, and took her riding in a borrowed buggy with the fastest colt in town. He gave the 4th of July oration at the Temperance Society dinner. Then he got himself as drunk as a skunk and told the company what he thought of him. Soon after, Undie met him in Main Street, downtown Apex.
Well, Undine Spratt, you like to take a walk with me?
I don't think I should. Oh, why not?
Take my arm. Ha! Look at him stare.
Let him stare.
Look at Milla Binch's mama. She swallowed a lemon.
Why should I care?
Well, I suppose you know I'm down and out here.
You must have wanted to be, or you wouldn't have behaved the way you did on Sunday.
Oh, shucks. What do I care? In a one-horse place like this, if it hadn't been for you, I'd have got to move on long ago.
Where'd you go?
There's a wide world waiting. I'm heading for New York City, where there's scope for a man with ambitions.
You are?
I surely am. If you'll come with me.
Come? But I'm engaged to Millard Binch.
That sap? It makes me too damn sick to see him going around looking as if he's patented you.
You've got no right.
I got a right to, because I dare. Will you marry me? Come on, Undy. What do you say? Will you marry me? Will you? Will you?
He's the only man who's ever understood what I wanted. And he's in Paris. Why shouldn't I phone him?
Elmer, you oughtn't to have let Fleischhauer write that letter. My husband's furious.
Why? Didn't I offer him enough?
He's furious that anyone should offer anything. I thought when he found out what they were worth, he might be tempted. But he'd rather see me starve than part with one of his grandfather's snuff boxes.
Well, he knows what the tapestries are worth. I offered him more than Fleischhauer advised.
Yes, but you were in too much of a hurry.
All I've got to be, Undy. I'm going back next week.
Oh, why? I hoped you might stay on.
Even if I did, I probably shouldn't see anything of you.
Why not? Why won't you come and see me?
Visit you at your apartment here in Paris?
Why not? Oh, Elmer, I'm so sick of being kept like a prisoner. I can't.
Undy, what do you mean? Tell me.
I can't. Not here.
Let's go out onto the terrace.
They watch me. Raymond's mother, his aunt, his sister. And then they report back.
They tell tales?
They think I'm extravagant. And he hates me to have any kind of life. He thinks it's wrong of me to come up to town on my own, to dine out, to spend one sou of his money.
I call it darned low, darned low.
I go round more now. I mean to see my friends. I don't care what he says.
What can he say?
Oh, he despises Americans. They all do.
Well, I guess we can still sit up and take nourishment.
So, do please postpone your sailing. We could do some excursions together and sightseeing.
Ah. The things I most want to see, I can't get into. They're held in private collections, and how the devil one gains admittance, I don't know.
Like the Duke of Dordogne?
Yes, yes. There's an Angrist there that's one of the things I came over to have a look at, specially, and they tell me there's no use trying.
Oh, I can easily manage it. The Duke's Raymond's uncle. But he's down in the country this weekend, and no one is allowed to see the pictures when he's away. Of course, his Angrists are the finest in France.
Well, then let's see him next week. And in the meantime, we could run out to Versailles. There's a capital little restaurant I've just discovered.
Undine saw Elmer Moffat every day, and Raymond never said a word. She and Elmer visited rare collections and inspected the treasures of famous dealers. They wined and dined and amused themselves mightily, and Undy began to dread the day he'd have done with postponing his sailing. Her Paris lifestyle cost a deal of money, and although she applied again to her parents, they couldn't help her. Mr. Sprague never did make another hit on Wall Street. Undy wished for their own sakes that they were better off, so's they could have had the happiness of giving her what she wanted. The poor girl got back to the apartment one day to find an angry tradesman waiting with a bill. He made a scene. She had only just got rid of him when she realized her mother-in-law was sitting in the drawing room, listening to every word.
It would perhaps be best for me to go.
Oh, I don't care. You're welcome to tell Raymond you've heard me insulted because I'm too poor to pay my bills. He knows it well enough already.
I'm sure my son has frequently recommended greater prudence.
Yes! It's a pity he didn't recommend it to your other son instead. All the money I was entitled to has gone to pay Hubert's debts.
Raymond has told me there are certain things you fail to understand. I have no wish to discuss them. I shall say nothing whatever of what has happened.
My God, they know I have nothing and they won't shift themselves to give me a sou. Oh no, all they'll do is join ranks to hide me. Oh, it's not to be endured!
Undine, Hello?
Elma, don't send me away. Don't send me away.
What is it? What's the matter?
I don't know. But I had to come. Today, when you spoke again of sailing, I felt as if I couldn't stand it.
Things going wrong at home again? Is that the trouble?
Things always are wrong. It's been an awful mistake. But I shouldn't care if you were here and I could see you sometimes. You're so strong. That's what I feel about you, Elmer. Do you remember the afternoon in Apex when I met you down on Main Street?
You're not the beauty you were, but you're a lot more fetching.
I suppose I must be dreadfully changed.
You're all right. But I've got to go back home. I've put it off too long.
I knew you'd say that. And I shall just be left here. I saw you look at your watch when I came in. I suppose somebody else is waiting for you.
No, it don't matter.
Some other woman?
It don't matter.
I've wondered so often, but of course I've got no right to ask. Just tell me one thing. Did you never miss me?
Oh, damnably.
It's the only time I ever really cared. All through.
I believe you did.
Elmer, if you're going away, it can't do any harm to tell me. Is there anyone else?
In that kind of way? Lord, no. Too busy.
Then why not? Why shouldn't we? I can do as I please. My husband does. They think so differently about marriage over here. It's just a business contract. I've always felt, all through everything, that I belong to you.
You say your husband goes with other women?
People have told me so. His own relations have. I've never stooped to spy on him.
And the women in your set, I suppose it's taken for granted they all do the same. Everything's fixed up for them, same as it is for the husbands, eh? Nobody meddles or makes trouble if you know the ropes?
No, nobody. It's all quite easy.
And that's what you're proposing to me? That you and I should do like the rest of them? Look here, Undine. If I'm to have you again, I don't want to have you that way. That time out in Apex when everybody in the place was against me and I was down and out, you stood up to him and stuck by me. Remember that walk down Main Street, don't I? And the way they glared and hurried by. And how you kept on alongside of me, talking and laughing and looking your Sunday best. When Abner Sprague came out to Opaque after us and pulled you back, I was pretty sore at your deserting. But I came to see it was natural enough. You were only a spoiled girl, used to having everything you wanted, and I couldn't give you a thing then. I used to say it to myself over and over again, laying awake nights and totting up my mistakes. And then there were days when the wind set another way, and I knew I'd pull it off yet. And I thought you might have held on.
If only I'd known.
Well, anyhow, you were my wife once, and you were my wife first. And if you want to come back, you've got to come back that way. Not slink about, but walk in by the front door with your head up. And your Main Street look.
Oh, Elmer.
Is it yes?
Yes.
Are you going to marry me?
Well, Elmer, marry you? You forget.
Forget what? That you don't want to give up what you've got?
How can I? I'm a Catholic in the Catholic Church.
Such things are not done out here.
If only you'd stay over here and let me see you sometimes.
Well, the way your friends see each other. We're differently made out in Apex. When I want that sort of thing, I go down to North 5th Street for it.
At least if you stayed, we could be friends. I shouldn't feel so terribly alone.
Don't talk magazine stuff to me, Undine Sprague. I guess we want each other the same way. Only our ideas are different. You got all muddled. living out here among a lot of loafers who call it a career to run around after every petticoat. I got my job out at home, and I belong where my job is.
Are you going to be tied to your business all your life?
I got about as much idea of dropping business as you have of taking to district nursing. I understand why your husband won't sell those tapestries till he's got to. His ancestors are his business. Wall Street's mine.
I suppose it's goodbye then.
You haven't got the nerve?
The nerve for what?
To come where you belong. With me.
How could I get a divorce with my religion?
You were born a Baptist, weren't you? That's where you used to attend church when I waited around the corner Sunday mornings with one of old Hober's buggies. If you'll come along home with me, I'll see you get your divorce all right. Who cares what they do over here? You're an American, ain't you? What you want is the homemade article.
You don't know. You don't understand.
See here, Undine. I guess it better be a yes or a no right here. It ain't gonna do either of us any good to drag this thing out. If you want to come back to me, come. If you don't, we'll shake hands on it now. I'm due in Apex for a director's meeting on the 20th, and as it is, I'll have to cable for a special to get me out there. No, no, don't cry. It ain't that kind of story. But I'll have a deck suite for you on the Semantic if you'll sail with me the day after tomorrow.
Undine Sprague Moffat Marvell Deschelle Moffat. That girl was a wonder for getting at what she wanted. 2 years later, she found she was gaining a little weight, and she sent for me to come and stay at the fine old hotel Mr. Moffat had bought for her in Paris so I could be her personal masseuse. I was there on the first day of the Easter holiday when young Paul Marvell arrived from boarding school.
I'm Mrs. Heaney. Don't you remember me? Why, I used to stay at your Grandma Sprague's.
Oh, in New York? Oh,
just look how growed up and handsome you are. How old are you now, Polly?
9. Is my mother here?
Oh, why, no. She and Mr. Moffat's run down to Deauville to look at a house they're thinking of hiring for the summer. But they'll be back for dinner. There's a whole pile of folks coming to dinner.
Do you know which is my room?
You better ask one of the maids. Oh, well, I guess you're as strange here as I am, and we're both pretty strange to each other. Do you want to find out all the news about your mama? I could let you take a look at my clippings. Would you like that?
I don't know. Yes, please, ma'am.
Well, sit you down, and let's have a look-see in my big black bag. Oh, how you used to hunt in it for taffy, to be sure, when your pa brought you up to Grandma Sprague's on Saturdays. Well, I'm afraid there ain't any taffy in it now, but there's piles and piles of lovely new clippings you ain't seen.
My papa never saw my Grandma Sprague. He never went to America.
Never went to America? Your pa never... Why, land alive, Paul Marvell, don't you remember your own father, you, that bear his name?
That one died a long time ago, didn't he? I was thinking of my French father.
Oh, mercy. No, you know, you just look at these clippings. I guess you'll find a lot of them about your ma.
Where do they come from?
Why, out of the papers, of course. You ought to start a scrapbook yourself. You're plenty old enough. You could make a beauty just about your ma, with a picture pasted in the front. Oh, and another about Mr. Moffat and his collections. There's one I cut out the other day that says he's the greatest collector in America.
Why is Mother married to Mr. Moffat now?
Why, you must know that much, Paul. She's married to him because she got a divorce, that's why. Didn't she ever send you over any of those splendid clippings that came out the time they were married? Oh, I declare that's a shame, but I must have some of them right here. Oh, I've carried this round with me ever since, and so many's wanted to read it, it's all torn. Divorce and remarriage of Mrs. Undine Sprague Deschelle. American Marquis renounces ancient French title to wed Railroad King. Boy and girl romance renewed. Reno, November 23rd. The Marquise de Chelles of Paris, France, formerly Mrs. Undine Sprague Marvell of Apex City of New York, got a decree of divorce at a special session of the court last night and was remarried 15 minutes later to Mr. Elmer Moffat, the billionaire railroad king, who was the Marquise's first husband. Judge Toomey, who is a personal friend of Mr. Moffat's, held a night session and railroaded it through so that the happy couple could have the knot tied and board their special in time for Mrs. Moffat to spend Thanksgiving in New York with her aged parents. At the trial, Mrs. Sprague de Chelles, who wore copper velvet, and sables, gave evidence as to the brutality of her French husband.
No!
Beg pardon?
My French father was kind.
Well, never mind that. The bridegroom is said to be one of the six wealthiest men east of the Rockies. His gifts to the bride are a necklace and tiara of pigeon blood rubies belonging to Queen Marie Antoinette, $1 million check, and a house in New York. The happy pair will pass the honeymoon in Mrs. Moffat's new home, 5009 Fifth Avenue, which is an exact copy of the Pitti Palace, Florence. They plan to spend their springs in France. There. Now you see how it all happened.
But my French father...
Marquis de Chelles?
Yes, my papa. He was gentil. He would never...
Oh, and here they are.
My mother told a lie.
Well, Captain Marvell, it feels good to shake your hand again.
Mercy, how they've cut his hair.
Mother!
Gracious, Polly, how you squeeze. But you look splendidly, and how you've grown.
The tapestries. Is Papa coming?
Somehow they look smaller here, Elmer.
Well, they look well enough, Undine.
I didn't think you'd ever get them.
Well, I don't know as I ever should if General Arlington hadn't happened to go bust.
Mother, I took a prize in composition.
Did you? You must tell me about it tomorrow. Mm. No, I really must rush off and dress now. I haven't even placed the dinner card.
Can't you ever give him a minute's time, Undine? I guess you know where those tapestries come from, don't you?
Oh, yes.
You're a smart boy to remember them. I don't suppose you ever thought you'd see them here.
I don't know.
Well, I guess you wouldn't have if their owner hadn't been in a pretty tight place. It was like drawing teeth for him to let him go. Oh, well, hello, old chap. What's up? Is it because your mother hadn't time for you? Well, she's like that, you know. And you and I have got a lump it. If we two chaps stick together, it won't be so bad. We can keep each other warm, you see? I like you first rate, you know. When you're big enough, I mean to put you in my business. And it looks as if one of these days, you'll be the richest boy in America.
They haven't quite finished the flowers, but those gold baskets of figs and strawberries are a nice touch.
The candlelight makes these old tapestries glow. Look at the rose tones here.
How's my hair? This mirror's wavy.
Ah, you're pretty enough. The mirror's worn out with telling you.
Don't forget you're to take down Madame de Folerive, and for goodness sake, don't call her Countess.
Why, she is one, isn't she?
Oh, excuse me, but oh my, that table does look fine. The maid can't find Paul's dinner jacket.
For goodness sake, tell her to look in his trunk. If it's still there, it will need pressing.
Well, I guess there's only one dinner sweller than this in the whole of Paris tonight.
Really? And where's that, Mrs. Heaney?
It says in the paper the new American ambassador's hosting a banquet. I'll go and see to that jacket.
The ambassador? If you had a spark of ambition, that's the kind of thing you'd try for, Elmer. You could have got it just as easily as not.
As it happens, it's about the one thing I couldn't.
You couldn't? Why not?
Because you're divorced. They won't have divorced ambassadresses.
Why not? I'd like to know.
Well, I guess the court ladies are afraid there'll be too many pretty women in the embassies.
I've never heard of anything so insulting.
I'd lay they weren't aiming at you personally.
I'd make a perfect ambassador's wife. It's the part I was made for.
I guess you've already come a fair way from Apex City, Undine Moffat. Shall we go up to our guests?
In The Custom of the Country, Mrs. Heaney was played by Lorelei King, Elmer Moffat by Tom Hollander, Ralph Marvell by Dan Stevens, and Undine Spragg by Rebecca Knight. The Marquis and Maid were played by Olwen May, Raymond by Joseph Klosker, Princess Estradina by Provence Maydew, and Paul by Daniel Rogers. The Custom of the Country was written by Edith Wharton, dramatised by Jane Rogers, and directed by Nadia Molinari. At this time tomorrow, we begin The Lady's Delight, a love story by Emile Zola, set in the hustle and bustle of a department store in Paris.
The BBC Radio New Comedy Award is back.
I do have two kids, their names are ridiculous. And Keith!
And now, it's bigger than ever.
This is the first heat broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra!
Follow the search from the start as BBC Radio 4 Extra brings you the highlights and results from all eight national heats.
Americans spend more each year on coffee than on educating their children. How do they sleep at night?
The 2013 BBC Radio New Comedy Award begins here on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Well done.
In Friday night's Comedy Club at 10:30.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been lovely. I've been an absolute legend.
In an hour from now, our comedy is about a man who needs to forget about life in the big city as he adapts to working in a regional newspaper office. Are You From the Bugle begins at 5:00. But now, it's Mel O'Clock.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's 4 o'clock show performance will begin in 2 minutes. If you could please turn your mobile phones to silent during the show, that would be much appreciated. I'd also like to remind you that there are many tasty snacks available from the kiosk in the foyer, including
oysters, mussels, periwinkles, whelks, we've even got a cuttlefish.
Yes, coming up we'll enter, I like to call it my second home, the world of Elizabethan drama, and discover what passed for nibbles in Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. No, I suppose no matchmakers for them or huge boxes of Maltesers. Probably a little pig's foot or a chicken's claw would have sufficed. Also coming up later, we'll get up close and personal with a herd of reindeer. And Claire Balding brings us a really shaggy dog story.
Walking towards me is a dog which has floor length, dark black with slightly grey streaks in it hair. He's got this beautiful flowing coat. His ears have long hair as well and the hair falls all over his face.
Plus there's a second part of our current story, the boy who sprouted antlers.
Billy couldn't get to Repton Road quickly enough. He broke the news to Melanie and Paul, who were there waiting for him, and let them inspect his head. It was clear that they were convinced that Billy had started growing horns.
First, though, boarding passes and passports at the ready. We're off on another magical mystery tour. Yep, it's time for another adventure to the ends of the earth. And today's location has literally been the end for a number of travellers. I'll furnish you with clues throughout the show, and all you have to do is guess where we're heading. Let's begin by saying this place is a tiny bit of Britain in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It's famous for having the world's most golf courses per square mile, and it gets all its fresh water from rainfall. Probably they've got a lot of butts. I mean water butts, to collect the rainfall, yeah. So do you know where to put your pin in the aforementioned map? Can you work out the longitude and latitude from that first clue? Well, fear not, as there are lots more hints still to come throughout the show.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Our story this week is The Boy Who Sprouted Antlers by John Yeoman. It tells the tale of a young lad called Billy Dexter, who wishes that he could grow his own pair of horns, and by a bizarre twist of fate, he succeeds.
Next morning, Mrs. Dexter woke him up at the usual time. "Get up, Billy," she called as she opened his curtains to let the light in. "It's a fine morning and..." "Do leave your head alone. Does it ache?" she asked anxiously. She took Billy's hand from his head and put her own in its place. The expression on her face told Billy what he wanted to know.
"You've got a bump, Billy. Two bumps."
Well, if Billy needs any antler management, he could always call on a group of shaggy beasts in the Highlands of Scotland. Nestled in the heart of the Cairngorm Mountains, the Reindeer Centre is home to Britain's only herd of these hardy Nordic beasts. Here, BBC Radio Scotland's Mark Stephen dons a heavy jacket, grabs a bucket of feed, and meets Frank Aspinall, one of the volunteers at the Reindeer Centre.
That clicking noise is the tendons and their heels. Reindeer barging in front of me and all around me. Well, there's no point looking at me, I haven't got it. They're not very big animals, Frank.
Well, they're surprisingly bigger than you think. Overall, they're slightly bigger than red deer, but of course people don't actually get that close to red deer to see how big they are. The other thing is that they stand with their heads down. They don't do the Monarch of the Glen pose, like with the heads up and saying, "I'm king of the jungle." It's a bit silly if you're an Arctic animal to stand with your head up.
How long have you worked with them?
Well, altogether about 9 or 10 years, but permanently just over 5 years since I retired and came up here to work with them, yeah.